Breaking news, Iran has tested an advanced ballistic missile, and the U.S. responds.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo now saying Iran has test-fired a medium-range ballistic missile, violating a U.N. resolution.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
In a statement, Pompeo says the missile is capable of carrying multiple warheads, adding, quote, "As we have been warning for some time, Iran's missile testing and missile proliferation is growing. We are accumulating risk of escalation in the region. If we fail to restore deterrence, we condemn these activities and call upon Iran to cease immediately all activities related to ballistic missiles designed to be capable of delivering nuclear weapons."
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. Late Friday evening, the United States, through Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and National Security Advisor John Bolton, confirmed that Iran has test-launched a ballistic missile violating UN Security Council resolution ban. That ban is UNSC Resolution 2231, Part 3, which says that Iran is called upon not to undertake any activity related to ballistic missiles designed to be capable of delivering nuclear weapons, including launching such ballistic missile technology. That was done. So yes, that violates an existing UN Security Council resolution, even with some of those countries still being part of that nuclear deal that the U.S.
pulled out
of.
The statement from Mike Pompeo went further and said, "As we've been warning for some time, Iran's missile testing and missile proliferation is growing. We are accumulating risk of escalation in the region. If we fail to restore deterrence, we condemn these activities and call upon Iran to cease immediately all activities related to ballistic missile designed to be capable of delivering nuclear weapons." In our studio here is Colonel Wes Smith, senior military analyst, and our senior counsel for military affairs, Skip Ash, in our office at the campus at Regent University. Let me go to Wes first. What's your reaction to this?
Yeah, what Iran is doing is a continuous march towards nuclear weapons and then the weapon systems capable of delivering them. The new thing about this particular missile test is that it's capable of launching multiple warheads. Prior to this, we believe that Iran was capable of launching, they've been testing medium-range ballistic missiles capable of carrying a warhead. This one, much like the missiles in the arsenals of China, Russia, and the United States, is capable of one launch carrying multiple warheads to go to multiple targets. And this is a new development. It's ominous. Much like North Korea was doing over the last decade, Iran is following in those footsteps with this difference, Jay, and that is North Korea has not specifically said we are going to destroy a particular nation. They just want to be a nuclear power. Iran has stated categorically that they intend to annihilate Israel. So this is a very ominous development.
Yeah, no question about it. Skip, what's your reaction?
I agree with West. The issue of multiple warheads is a significant increase in the threat matrix here, because these are one of the things you fire one missile and you can hit multiple targets. That is very significant, because you could fire at Israel and you could hit all the major cities of Israel with one missile. So this is very significant.
Harry, from a policy perspective, this has been a concern of the United States since the outset. What's your reaction to it?
Well, I think my reaction is as follows. Iran is clearly on the march. In addition to the missile launch, capable of launching multiple warheads at multiple targets, Iran has launched a stealth warship recently, and in an ominous development, it is now using civilian aircraft to ship directly from Tehran to Beirut military weaponry. It has sent GPS devices to Hezbollah, and they're capable of targeting rockets toward Israel, along with missiles. So this is an ominous development.
Jordan, you think it's my sense is this is the Iranians trying to make a calculation to see what the threat matrix of the president will be, what he will allow.
What President Trump will allow, and those of the European countries that have remained in the JCPOA, the agreement with Iran on the nuclear deal. The U.S. pulled out, but will Russia and China sit back while they're testing these kind of missiles, intermediate ballistic missiles that could hit Europe? I mean, that is a big question mark. And, of course, those other European countries who are now in range as well. So I think they're testing President Trump and the remaining members of their coalition.
All right, we'll take your reaction to this. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast. Everyone, we're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announced that the Iranian regime has just test-fired a medium-range ballistic missile that is capable of carrying multiple warheads. The missile has a range that allows it to strike parts of Europe and anywhere in the Middle East. Test violates UN Security Council Resolution 2231 that bans Iran from undertaking any activity related to ballistic missiles designed to be capable of delivering nuclear weapons, including launches using such ballistic missile technology. Before I go to David Benjamin, senior counsel for the ACLJ and our offices in Jerusalem, let me go to Colonel Skip Ash. So Skip, your reaction to this, you said at the beginning, an act of provocation, but it's also interesting to see what those members of the JCPOA are going to say.
Oh, that's right. This is one of these things where the Iranians are acting in a way that should wake the Europeans up, those members who are already part of this agreement that the United States has withdrawn from. It should wake them up because the development of these missiles, even if only today they can carry conventional warheads, the development of the missile will easily be adaptable to nuclear warheads when they exist, and it puts Europe at risk, and therefore they need to count the cost and say, is this nation acting in a way that's consistent with what their commitment was? They seem to be following the DPRK model, the North Korean model, which is keep raising the stakes with the hope of having President Trump come back in and try to defuse things by agreement. But I think they're miscalculating significantly in this matter.
Let me go to David Benjamin, a senior counsel for the ACLJ, our office in Jerusalem. David, your reaction to Mike Pompeo's announcement about Iran testing a ballistic missile, mid-range ballistic missile, violating the UN National Security Council ban?
Well, I could say that it's not surprising. This, of course, completely falls in line with Iran's conduct over the years and going forward. Of course, it's all about good faith or the lack thereof. Iran is in complete bad faith. Remember, the whole idea of the JCPOA was essentially an agreement with Iran, which says, Iran, you have to agree to obey the law, nothing more. The expectation of Iran is simply to uphold its obligations under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Agreement, no more than that. All that Iran is being asked to do is behave normatively as a state, of a member of the international system, nothing more. Of course, no surprises there because Iran is busy, all over the place. We have a new development now in Lebanon where Iran is directly supplying precision weapons to Hezbollah through Beirut Airport. Mm. It's all part of a big story.
Even gotten into the situation here, David, where our UN ambassadors raised the issue of a of a resolution condemning Hamas for to be the first time that's ever been raised. We're also getting phone calls. Let's go ahead and take a call, and then I want to play a statement from General Mattis on this.
Yeah, Jonah calling in from New York on line one. Jonah, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hey, Jonah.
Thanks, guys. Happy Hanukkah. Listen, with the
Happy Hanukkah to all our listeners, too.
Thank you.
We had a great time with my grandkids. Yesterday we had our Hanukkah party. It's a tradition of the Sekulow family. And we continue.
Fantastic. Keep it alive.
Yep.
So I'm trying to figure out where this goes and what's the calculus on it. Well, clearly, the JC agreement is meaningless to them. The sanctions don't have any bearing because they don't really care about their people, and they're rich anyway, some of the wealthiest people on the planet, the leaders in Iran. So money is, you know, sanctions isn't really. The only thing that's going to really change the future here is either an overthrow of by their own people, you know, or a regime change internally, or some sort of military action. Got to bring the pain to them because they don't really care what happens anyplace else on the planet. It's only what could happen to them directly. What does it take? I mean, at what point does Israel? There's almost commandments, really, that if somebody's going to kill you, you strike first.
Well, let me ask David Benjamin. I don't know if you want to phrase it quite that way, but David, Colonel Benjamin, I should say as well, in the Israeli Defense Force. What's your assessment of the Israel reaction to this? Do we know yet?
There hasn't been a lot of reaction from Israel. We know that Prime Minister Netanyahu is supposed to be meeting Secretary Pompeo in Brussels. This is apparently an urgent meeting, so I would assume that it refers at least in part to this issue of the Israeli missile. But also, my guess is it also concerns to the change in Iranian tactics of now supplying Hezbollah directly through Beirut Airport using civilian Boeing aircraft. So that could also be part of it. Of course, Israel has said very clearly that it will not tolerate a situation of a nuclear Iran. So let's just, you know, interpret that as you will.
All right. So this puts it all into a perspective, Jordan. You look at I think there's part of this as a geopolitical test of the will of the nations.
Oh, that's right. I mean, I look at the countries. Obviously, the United States pulled out of the Iranian nuclear deal just because it did not trust Iran and believed that Iran would continue to act this way, continue to test ballistic missiles in violation of not just the JCPOA and or what's known as the Iranian nuclear deal, but in violation of existing UN Security Council resolutions. So the Trump administration said, we're out of this. But who's still in it? Technically, even though by the U.S. pulling out, it kind of destroys the whole deal, technically Russia, China, Germany, France, and the U.K. are still signed on to this. Well, now that P4 plus one, because that now includes Russia, China, France, and the UK as the P4. They're permanent members of the Security Council. The plus one is Germany. Well, four of those can now be in range of Iranian ballistic missiles Iranian ballistic missiles that can carry multiple nuclear warheads.
Yes, and even multiple conventional warheads is a real threat to the peace of that region. The bottom line is they are a threat, period. They are living up to their moniker as the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism. And as David Benjamin mentioned, you know, they are now providing sophisticated guidance systems to the missiles and rockets possessed by Hezbollah. We don't know but what they will try to get some of those to Hamas, so that instead of just lobbing missiles into Israel, as they've done over the last years, they can now target specific locations in Israel thanks to technology supplied by Iran, delivered on civilian aircraft. We found out this past Thursday, Jordan, that not only that, and this was a new development that's been overshadowed by other events, but we found out that Iran is also providing rockets and other heavy weapons to the Taliban in Afghanistan, who are killing Americans.
I want to go back to David Benjamin, because David, in Israel, I think it's a critical time that Israel works with the United States and find some other allies to make it clear, especially to European allies, that this is obviously a huge threat to Israel. It's a huge threat to the United States. We have so many military bases and citizens in the region. But it's a more mainstream threat, if you will, to Europeans, who need to understand that Iran has just as much an issue with them as they do the United States of America. They have that same kind of issue with the secular Western world.
Of course, well, it's a threat to just about everybody, also in our region, not just Israel, of course, the Sunni states, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Jordan, etc. They're of course, also feeling threatened by Iran. There almost isn't anybody who's not feeling threatened here. Maybe Syria, what exists of Syria. So it's a bit difficult to understand why Europe can't come aboard and see what's at stake here. And, of course, Europe is actually more threatened in terms of its home front by these Iranian missiles than the U.S. So difficult to understand the European approach. It might be something about just being a little bit otherwise from what the U.S. is doing today.
Yeah, it is. I mean, let me go to another phone call. And if you want to talk to us on the air, 1-800-684-3110. Also, the U.S. At the United Nations is putting forward the first resolution of its kind to condemn Hamas as a terror organization. It's supported, this resolution, by the European Union, interesting enough. Palestinians were able to move the vote from today till Thursday. We're going to update you on this, but let me get a phone call in before we go to the next break. Let's go to Gay calling in from California Online 5. Gay, welcome to Jay Sekio Live.
Hi, Jay. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for joining us.
thank you. What's the repercussions, according to the agreement, if they do any testings? Isn't there some sort of repercussions?
Harry?
Well, from the Europeans, there are no direct repercussions unless they are prepared to take action. Now, I think the first step in terms of the European response is to support UN Ambassador Haley's resolution. That's a good step because Hamas is one of the allies of Iran that Iran has attempted to prop up in addition to Hezbollah. But the Europeans need to confront the threat from Iran more directly. And I think one of the ways of doing that is by imposing European sanctions on Iran and withdrawing from the JCPOA.
Folks, let me thank you for the matching challenge you participated in November. We were able to hit our goals because of your support to the American Center for Law and Justice. Those are some big goals, financial challenges. This is a big time of year for us at the ACLJ to continue to fundraise as we finish out the work. A lot of work left for this year in December, but also to prepare for all the battles ahead in January. So thank you if you helped us meet that goal for November just on Friday night. Thank you so much. And if you want to support the work of the ACLJ and you didn't donate then, you can donate now at aclj.org. We'll be right back on the broadcast with this news out of the UN and Hamas.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We've been discussing and will continue to discuss this provocative move by Iran, confirmed by the United States late Friday evening by both Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and National Security Advisor John Bolton, that Iran has test-launched a ballistic missile violating UN Security Council Ban 2231 that bans Iran from undertaking, quote, any activity related to ballistic missiles designed to be capable of delivering nuclear weapons. This is a ballistic missile designed to deliver multiple ballistic nuclear warheads that could reach anywhere in Europe and the Middle East. So any parts of Europe and the Middle East. This would be a medium-range intercontinental ballistic missile, and it has been test-fired. Iran's only response is, oh, we did this for defensive reasons. There is no reason whatsoever. I'll take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Let me go to Skip Ash and Wes on this, our veterans here. Skip first and then Wes. There's no reason to have ballistic missile testing going on to fire warheads for defensive purposes.
I think you're right in this case, because I don't think anybody is going to be attacking Iran, and there's not a threat to attack Iran but for the fact that they are developing offensive weapons. They're saying this is a defensive weapon. The issue here is, right now, we don't think they have the nuclear warheads, but they are preparing the way so that when they have them and they're miniaturized to be able to fit onto one of these missiles, as soon as they have it, they will be capable. There will be no gap in time because the missiles will be ready. Even now, they can fire conventional weapons, but as soon as they have the nuclear warheads, that's what's dangerous. They will instantaneously be able to convert those missiles into nuclear, aggressive nuclear weapons.
Yeah, there are two steps to Iran becoming a true nuclear threat to the entire world. One is to have a ballistic missile capable of carrying weapons. The other is to develop the weapons themselves and to miniaturize them so they can fit into the missile. And here's the thing that we don't know, Jordan. Part of the JCPOA, this ill-advised agreement, in that the IAEA and the inspectors, they are not allowed to inspect any Iranian military facilities, civilian facilities only. So, I mean, it's common sense that if Iran is developing nuclear weapons or working on it, and I'm convinced they are, they would do it on a military base because the military bases are exempt from inspection. So I think while they're trying to perfect this medium-range missile, my money would say that they're also already working on nuclear weapons. And when these two steps are complete, it is a game changer. And the time to react to Iran, whether it's economically or militarily, is now, not when they possess a miniaturized nuclear weapon to go on this missile.
We are continuing to take your phone calls throughout this broadcast today, not waiting to the end of the show. So give us a call. The number is 1-800-684-3110 if you want to join us on air with your questions or comments. That's 1-800-684-3110. Jerry is called in from Rhode Island, online 2. Jerry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Jerry. Happy Hanukkah to the fellow listeners and those at ACLJ.
Thank you.
And to follow up on what Jay said, that he thinks it's a test, I'm presuming that both colonels or either one of them have been through one of the war colleges. I live in the back the neighborhood of the Naval War College. So the listeners who may not know that, don't we kind of plan ahead for these kind of provocative moves?
Now, Jerry, great question. Let me go to Skip Ash first, then I'll go to Colonel Smith. Colonel Ash.
We do, definitely. They're at the war colleges. They do a lot of this in the strategic mode. I was in the War Plans Division of the Army Staff for 4 years, and one of the things we do is to prepare for contingency planning around the world. So, yes, that is ongoing for everything like this.
And Wes, go ahead.
Yeah, he's absolutely right. The military has a plethora of contingency plans, and they deal with every geographic part of the world and every possible scenario.
Yep.
And certainly they have several in Iran.
So let me ask this to Harry from a policy perspective again. What do you think the U.S. response should be to this?
Well, first, the United States should maintain, reinforce, and perhaps reimpose new sanctions on Iran. They should target specifically Iranian officials that are engaged in ballistic missile development. In addition, the United States should bring pressure to bear on the Europeans. The Europeans are now under a clear and unmistakable threat. And thirdly, we should point out that Iran is now in violation of the JCPOA, and we should encourage courageous European nations to join with the United States in rejecting the JCPOA. These are the first steps that we should take before considering military action, but we should also plan for the possibility of military action down the road if sanctions fail.
You know, how crazy is it that still remaining in that, now it used to be the P5 plus one, the P4 plus one, that you have Germany, France, and the UK, along with Russia, who now would be in range of these intermediate intercontinental ballistic missiles that are capable of carrying multiple nuclear warheads, and they have not yet quit the deal like the United States. They're still trying to do business with Iran. And of course, you can include China in there as well, not within the maybe the threat range of these intercontinental ballistic missiles, but still posing an actual threat to these countries' citizens in an offensive way, and yet they are still yet to follow the path of the United States in condemning Iran, even when Iran is not just in violation of the JCPOA, but of existing UN Security Council Resolution 2231 that bans them from undertaking these activities. But we've got also new work going on at the United Nations. And so in our second half hour, we'll talk to you about this, 1-800-684-3110. This is a statement by the U.S. mission on the Palestinian delay tactics designed to defend Hamas terrorism. This is from Ambassador Nikki Haley. Today, the United Nations, this was on Friday, approved 6 anti-Israel resolutions. That makes it pretty much an ordinary day at the UN. But today was not ordinary in another way. The U.S. has introduced a resolution supported by the European Union, that is very key, to condemn Hamas's militant activities and diversion of aid, as well as to encourage intra-Palestinian reconciliation and respect for human rights. The resolution was supposed to be voted on today. However, the Palestinian representative at the UN pushed for a delay until Thursday. We will go through the draft of the resolution. This is the first time the U.S. has pushed for a resolution at the General Assembly to condemn Hamas and the Hamas terrorism tactics. And we've got the support of the European Union. Give us a call about this strong move to condemn Hamas at the United Nations after the United Nations spent Friday condemning Israel 6 times. Give us a call about that. Our second half hour coming up, 1-800-684-3110. That is 1-800-684-3110. Our thoughts and prayers are with the Bush family. President Bush, who passed away, Bush 41, who passed away on Friday at the age of 94. His wife, former First Lady Barbara Bush, also passed away this year in April. So prayers to the whole Bush family. Many of us at ACLJ have had an opportunity in our families to work with the Bush family at different levels of our career, and we're in prayers for them and for those who are going to be participating in their services as well, to honor President Bush's life as a leader, not just as president, but as a CIA director, as a war hero in World War II. So again, our thoughts and prayers with the Bush family and the many people affected by them throughout the years. 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on the air. Thank you for helping us meet our matching challenge goal in November. And you can help us. This is a big month, too. This is the final month of the year at ACLJ.org. Donate today.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Folks, we have gotten into the issue with Iran's test now of a medium-range intercontinental ballistic missile capable of carrying multiple nuclear warheads. The U.S. has condemned this. It violates a U.S. UN Security Council resolution, specifically Resolution 2231. So even we are waiting responses, really, from the remaining members of that Iranian nuclear deal. The U.S. pulled out of it, but Russia, China, the U.K., France, and Germany are still trying to keep that deal alive. What will they say in response to a missile test that could be capable of delivering nuclear weapons to their neighborhood? And, of course, it threatens Israel. It threatens U.S. interests as well. We've got so many interests in that region. 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on air. But let me talk about this, because this is a bold move at the U.N. You know, oftentimes at the U.N., we let these resolutions go by at the General Assembly condemning Israel. That happened this past Friday. Six resolutions condemning Israel were voted on and passed by the U.N. General Assembly. And it doesn't get much news coverage. And people, again, just kind of take it as is. But we don't really understand what that breeds throughout the world, the kind of hatred that that breeds. If when you're condemning a country like that, when you're the most condemned country at the U.N., what that does to the Jewish people. I mean, especially as we celebrate Hanukkah right now. And again, the U.S. is now doing something unprecedented under Ambassador Nikki Haley. Yes, she's still there to the end of the year and making her mark. The U.S. is putting forward a resolution to condemn Hamas and their terrorist activity. It was supposed to be on Monday. The Palestinian representative got it pushed back till Thursday. So it was supposed to be today, got pushed back to Thursday. Here is some draft of the text. The General Assembly reaffirming support for a just, lasting, and comprehensive peace between Israelis and Palestinians in accordance with international law and bearing in mind relevant UN resolutions, recognizing that all acts of violence against civilians, particularly acts of terror, as well as acts of provocation, incitement, and destruction, only serve to erode trust and hinder efforts to bring about a peaceful solution. Number one, this resolution condemns Hamas for repeatedly firing rockets into Israel and for inciting violence, thereby putting civilians at risk. Number two, demands that Hamas and other militant groups, including Palestinian Islamic Jihad, cease all provocative actions and violent activity, including by using airborne incendiary devices. There are other parts to this resolution we can go through, but we've also got European Union support. That's what the U.S. is reporting, is that the European Union is supporting this. This would be a very strong move. I'll go to Skip first on this. Skip, this would be a very strong move, even if it doesn't pass, but to get the European countries on board in condemning Hamas.
I agree with that. I think it's significant. This should happen more and more often because the Palestinian players, not just Hamas, but other Middle East players that support the Palestinian cause, are resorting to actions that are in clear violation of international law and the law of armed conflict by targeting and intentionally targeting civilians and targeting the economy, such as crops and so forth. So this is significant. I don't think it's going to pass. Having raised it, this should become hopefully a more frequent thing, that more and more nations of the world have to stand up and be counted on these things. And the fact that we have the EU on our side, I think, is a significant first step.
What's amazing here is that Fatah, which is the Palestinian Authority's political arm, is constantly in battle with Hamas. Sometimes they try to unite, but when Hamas took over the Gaza Strip in 2006, 2007, they took the Fatah leaders and threw them off the rooftops of buildings to their death, okay? But Fatah has just put out a statement, this is speaking on behalf of the Palestinian Authority, that we reject the American and Israeli efforts to brand Hamas with terrorism at the UN and will fight to defeat this resolution, despite what Hamas has done to undermine our legitimate Palestinian Authority. They're willing to, again, stand with a terrorist group who has terrorized their own leaders of their group. It is shocking, folks. This is so Middle East politics at play here. We want to take your phone calls on it, 1-800-684-3110. You just can't make it up. You have to read it from the press accounts. 1-800-684-3110. Give us a call. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow, and we are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. Updating you on some international news involving both Iran and Hamas that may have not gotten the attention because of course, the passing, very important, of our former President Bush, George H.W. Bush, who passed away at the age of 94 on Friday. The same year, his wife passed away, beloved First Lady Barbara Bush, who passed away in April of this year. His final phone call was with his son, who was also President of the United States, President George W. Bush. And I think that phone call ended with, "I love you, too," were the final words he uttered before he passed. And he was ready to go to heaven, as his good friend James Baker said, to see Barbara and his daughter, who he lost. She was just before she turned 4 years old, ready to go to heaven to be reunited with them. I've got to spend time with President Bush once as a very young child. When I was my brother was not even born yet, and I think I was about 3 years old, and I mostly remember that he came to our parents' house when he was vice president for a fundraiser. So he's at my mom and dad's house, and I remember them teaching me how to greet him by saying, "Hello, Mr. President. Hello, Ms. First Lady." And again, then years later, I was working on a campaign on his son's campaign. I worked on President George W. Bush's campaign, but also Jeb Bush's campaign. Both my wife, Anna, and I did. And we were in Houston, Texas. Jeb was giving a speech there. We were traveling with him, and his parents came to see him. And so we spent the day at the hotel where the speech was being given in Houston, where they lived with the former president and first lady. And so got to spend hours with them. It was a highlight of the campaign, but one of my highlights of my entire political career was to spend that time with President Bush and the former First Lady Barbara Bush as well. And I know it was a highlight and an honor for my wife as well. I want to go right to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. So let's be in prayer for that family and so many who are affected, crossing partisan lines. If you have thoughts, that you want to share, and prayers for that family, I think this is a great day to do it, as they're going through all of these ceremonies. It was he lived a long life, an unbelievable life, as a CIA director, a vice president to Reagan, a president who saw the end of the Cold War and the Soviet Union. a World War II war hero was shot down in the Pacific after carrying out his mission while his plane was on fire and rescued by a submarine, and then continued to rescue other pilots being shot down. This was someone just with a storied, long, unbelievable career who's had a long-lasting effect through his family as well. He is the only the second father and son duo to be president of the United States. There was John Adams and John Quincy Adams, and then there's President Bush and President George W. Bush. So you have thoughts to share on that, positive thoughts, not about politics, on President Bush and prayers for that family. You can give us a call on that as well at 1-800-684-3110. But we are focusing in on news that wasn't getting the coverage because of this loss of President Bush 41, and that is the news about Iran and what we're doing at the United Nations. Let's play Secretary of Defense General James Mattis talking about Iran and the actions and threat they are posing right now. And we'll take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110.
Iran is an interesting case of a regime that does not care for the best interests of their people. They're a revolutionary cause at that level. They take actions, constant actions, that actually put their people in worse position. The threat from Iran is multifaceted, and certainly what they have done with this launch is violated the sense of the United Nations Security Council resolution that told them not to do these kind of launches. It shows that our best efforts to try to talk them out of their aggressive support of terrorism is probably going to be as unsuccessful as the UN's effort to stop them from launching missiles.
So again, the idea that the Secretary of Defense does not have a lot of faith in UN efforts or these deals that have been put in place. So Wes, and then I'll go to Skip, what would prevent Iran from, what could the U.S. do now to really kick into gear so that Iran is scared, too scared to launch these kind of ballistic missiles?
Well, in the past, before the JCPOA was enacted, Iran was really being brought to its knees financially because of all of the sanctions, international sanctions, that were levied against the country. The people were in the streets protesting. There was word that their government, their extremist Islamic government, might fall, in fact. And then with the JCPOA, all of this went away. And so the best thing that could happen now, because, you know, we do want to avoid military action. That would be a last resort to try and stop them from becoming a nuclear power. But if the other European nations who are in the JCPOA and others who support it, if they would also enforce sanctions and put their own sanctions on Iran, we could go back to square one where we were before 2015, and economically cripple Iran in such a way that they would be forced to come to the negotiating table, to give up their ballistic missile program, to allow inspectors in to inspect their nuclear facilities. But that's the only thing that I see that's going to make a difference, is if the world unites together like we were before, and we simply say to Iran, you cannot be a part of the community of nations, and no one will do business with you as long as you are trying to develop these weapons. That really is the only thing, Jordan, short of taking military action, which no one wants.
Yeah, Skip, I mean, no one wants military action. I think that the president has been clear on that as well. But certainly he has advisors like Ambassador Bolton, who he has brought in to the administration, who are very tough. And I think if necessary, would be willing to take that step. And so it should scare Iran enough to know that people like John Bolton have the ear of the president as national security advisor. But we've got to do more, obviously, Skip, because we cannot allow them to continue to launch these kind of missiles, even though it's not yet confirmed that they've got the nuclear capability to put the nuclear weapons, warheads on them. I mean, that could be, are there any estimates, Skip? I know you follow closely, about how far away they are from getting the warheads to be able to attach to these kind of ballistic missiles?
The statistics and the information I have is all over the place on that. There's some that just talk about having a nuclear device to begin with, and then there's the whole issue of how do you miniaturize it to put it on the head of a missile. So it varies by experts giving various estimates. I think coming up with a nuclear weapon takes perhaps up to 3 years, some are saying. The miniaturizing of that, I think, is going to take a little bit more time. Although if they actively interact with the with North Korea. If North Korea actually has been able to miniaturize, then they might be able to do that more quickly. But I think right now, I think Wes is right in the fact that we need to impose more sanctions, and the United States needs to continue to build up this alliance with nations in the Middle East that are also threatened by the Shiite power.
Yeah.
The problem I see with great powers in the one sense is the Europeans do not want to spend anything on defense. So they're sort of a paper tiger. The Russians now want to take advantage of the United States. So they're actively conniving with the Iranians. And I think the Chinese will do what they think is in their best interest. So unless the United States can get the Middle East and those nations to come together and to make some commitments, I think it's going to be very difficult to bring military forces to bear without the United States bearing the major brunt of those operations.
Let me ask you this, callers, 1-800-684-3110. I'd love your response on this. How do you believe the Trump administration should respond to this move by Iran, these provocations? Remember, it's a threat to the United States. It's a threat to Israel. It's a threat to our allies in the region, including not just the Jewish state of Israel, but the majority Islamic countries of Saudi Arabia and Qatar and the UAE and Yemen. Yeah, the list can go on and on. Egypt. I could just go the Sunni world, basically, that Iran poses a threat to. How should the U.S. and the Trump administration respond to Iran? Give us a call now, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Get those calls in. We take all of your phone calls in the final segment of the broadcast. And if you've got thoughts you'd like to mention on President Bush's passing, it's time to do that as well. 1-800-684-3110. Call in now so we can get you in the next segment. Harry, there's the economic side of this that plays such a huge role. It seems like sometimes even with Iran and a radical regime, all they understand is not just tough. They understand tough rhetoric and actions, but they also understand their pocketbooks getting hurt because that's when unrest begins domestically.
The Iranians understand consequences. And we should note that Iran continues to act provocatively and they continue to raise the stakes. And the United States must work with the Europeans to encourage the European community to wake up and smell the espresso. It's a warning that is coming from Iran. They are prepared to attack Europe down the road. So they are in the crosshairs of Iran, and they need to face reality, and they need to withdraw from the JCPOA.
How should the Trump administration respond to this latest threat by Iran launching this ballistic missile capable of carrying multiple nuclear warheads hitting as far as Europe, but of course Israel and our allies in the region? 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We have a little bit of breaking news, actually, in this final segment of the broadcast. There were reports over the weekend after President Bush 41, President George H.W. Bush, passed away on Friday, that the budget deadline and the government, the potential for a government shutdown this Friday, would be delayed because of the state funeral that would be taking place this week, which will be on Wednesday in Washington, D.C. We can now confirm Than Bennett, our Director of Government Affairs, who is typically on the broadcast with us, but not usually on Mondays. He's with in key congressional meetings. He can confirm now that there will be there's a plan for a two-week continuing resolution to fund the entire federal government through December 21st. That is going to happen. And so that during that time period, of course, it allows for everyone to take part in the funeral, the state funeral for President George H.W. Bush. And it also gives more time for negotiations on the wall. He did report directly from this meeting with the congressional leadership and their staff that he goes to each Monday that they're still a long way apart on wall funding. But I did want to update you on why we weren't launching today right away with we've got a budget, you know, a potential government shutdown looming. We can now confirm, because of Than Bennett, our government affairs director, and in the meetings he's in right now in Capitol Hill, that there's not a government shutdown looming this week. So at least it will not be this week. The negotiations will continue. So what will happen is a two-week funding bill, it's called a CR, a continuing resolution, will be passed, and then the president will sign that. It will fund the entire federal government through December 21st. At that time, the Congress has got to negotiate a deal to get to the president's desk. He will then determine if it's got enough funding for the wall. He wants $5 billion. That's his position right now. He will then determine, but it'll be until December 21st until there's a potential shutdown, so just before Christmas. So gives more time for negotiations while and this is occurring, not to give them more time for negotiations. It's occurring because of the passing of President George H.W. Bush and the state funeral that is kind of takes over Washington, D.C., and the many people that will be affected by that participating in that. So that is why there will not be the potential for a shutdown this week. And if you are a government employee out there, you will know that everything is okay. The government will continue to be funded. And if you receive any of those government services through at least December 21st, and Congress has more time to negotiate. 1-800-684-3110 if you want to get a call in before the show is over today. That's 1-800-684-3110. Dennis on Facebook writes in that it's interesting how a country where poverty levels are astronomic can still afford ballistic missile testing. Clearly, their priorities are wrong. Now, we see this with North Korea. We see it also with Iran. And we know it's because their leaders have kind of conditioned their people to believe that the state, or and that's in North Korea's situation. Actually, in both North Korea and Iran, it's the kind of this religious zealousness that the leaders are these either gods themselves, like in North Korea, or the top religious leaders, like in Iran, and that is more important than taking care of your people. So whatever they decide is what is right, even if it hurts the people. And Harry, we see this over and over with Iran, maybe a little bit less with North Korea now that we've got some direct talks going on there now with Pyongyang. But with Iran, they did get an influx of cash, though. Their economy was actually on the up and up. Now, not so much.
Absolutely. So one of the advantages of maintaining a totalitarian regime is that you have the capability of subordinating your own people. This provides a huge advantage to the oligarchs who run many of these countries. So if you look at Iran, the mullahs are in charge, and the mullahs are very rich. And so if you want to be rich in Iran, you need to link up with the mullahs. However, one of the other problems that we should note is that authoritarian regimes generally do not last forever. So at some point, there will indeed be an organic internal reaction to authoritarian power, in addition to which external circumstances may push out the leaders in Iran eventually. And we need to do everything in our power, including sanctions, including enlisting the European leaders to throw out the JCPOA and bring pressure, external pressure, to bear on the Iranian leaders.
I'll go to Skip and then Wes, just very quickly. Skip, what can the U.S. military do, not taking actual action where we're like firing into Iran, but what can the U.S. military do to kind of put the pressure on Iran? Is it more ships in the Persian Gulf? Is it more flights over Iran and spy planes, that kind of intelligence gathering? What can the U.S. military do short of attacking Iranian nuclear facilities?
Well, we have a means of saber-rattling by use of carrier task groups and other things, by bringing in certain types of aircraft into the region, these aircraft that are unseeable, so to speak, for radar and so forth. So we have the capability of moving them or placing forces in certain positions to bring pressure on to bear on these things and to show that we are serious about what we're doing. We also have the idea of sending in key leaders like the Secretary of Defense or the secretaries of the various services meet with local leaders and to show commitments and to sign treaties of commitments. To do things like that, to provide equipment, to provide all sorts of visible things that that are symbolic in many ways, but also indicate a will on the part of the United States to follow through if necessary. And that sends signals to the military authorities and to the leading authorities of Iran and other nations in the region that we're serious and you can only push us so far. The fact that President Trump drew a red line in Syria about the use of certain types of weaponry, and when it was crossed, he responded, was a clear difference from the previous administration and showed that the United States was serious now about certain things, and that does not go without notice by the Iranians.
You know, quickly, Wes, we don't want to ever have to take action. No. This a regime, you're not sure how they're, I think the Revolutionary Guard would fight for financial reasons, not just religious reasons. But again, it would have a huge impact on a lot of good Iranian people. But we can kind of muscle up, if you will, in the region, working with, I think, not just Israel now, but with those Sunni allies.
Right, the Gulf states, yeah. The other thing, too, that's going on in Iran, and we need to take advantage of this both covertly and overtly, there is a lot of unrest there because the people are aware that the government is taking funds and they're supporting the Houthi rebels in Yemen, Hamas, Hezbollah. Meanwhile, the people are suffering. Unemployment's high, inflation's out of control. Yep. The people are really suffering. And so the Revolutionary Guards that you mentioned, they are part of the elite force. Right. The regular general rank and file of the military, they are as unhappy as the people are, and we can take advantage of that.
We can't let another green revolution go by like President Obama did in 2009. Without supporting and without covert action. So if people start taking to the streets, we need to get behind that in covert ways and also support it as a nation. As we finish out the show today, let me just do something that's personal to me, and I know the Seculo family, and that is to issue just prayers and thanks to President George H.W. Bush, who passed away on Friday. His wife, First Lady Barbara Bush, beloved by the nation as well, passed away earlier this year. I got to spend time with President Bush and Barbara Bush, a very young child, at my parents' home when they visited when he was vice president for a fundraiser. That's my grandfather, if you're watching on Facebook and Periscope, who has passed away with President Bush. And my wife and I got to spend the day with them back during Jeb Bush's campaign. It was an honor. And just pray for that family this week.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ